President Trump's Wednesday tweets declaring an end to transgender members of the U.S. military included the assertion that caring for the health needs of those members is too costly. But what sort of financial burden comes from a rough estimate of between 1,300 and 6,600 active duty transgender members? That's part of a report put together by a research team from the RAND Corporation last year. One member of that team is Radha Iyengar, a RAND senior economist, and she's with me to explain more. Radha, with that broad estimate of between 1,300 and 6,600 active duty transgender military members, how big a part of the military is that?
There are about 1.3 million service members. So right there you can see the proportion that are transgender is very small. Of that small portion, only a fraction are likely to seek transition-related medical care. So that's anything from mental health care and hormone replacement treatments to gender-confirming surgeries that can be more extreme. So our study found that between about 30 and 150 service members are likely to seek these types of gender transition-related surgeries in any given year. It's a really small percentage of the military, less than 1% of the active component. Just sort of for your comparison, there are about 102,000 non-deployable soldiers in the Army alone, about 50,000 in the active component in 2015. Compared to that, right, this is a drop in the bucket. Same thing for healthcare costs, because such a small fraction use these types of very costly healthcare services, and most of the healthcare services are relatively low cost. You're looking at about a tenth of a percent, so less than 1%, less than half of 1%, one-tenth of 1% increase in healthcare costs.
And if someone were not going to go through the process, as you mentioned, even a small percentage of a small percentage were looking for gender transition-related healthcare or treatment in that sense, could we characterize the folks who are transgender who are not going through that treatment? Would their healthcare costs be similar to any other member of the military?
Certainly, if they weren't seeking transition-related costs, we wouldn't expect them to have any other different or special costs.
In the big picture, then, of what the defense budget looks like and what the current administration has asked for, from a cost standpoint, that is kind of a red herring?
That's right. So I think there's just the evidence is not consistent with saying that there are high costs, either in terms of medical costs or readiness costs, for allowing open service. I'd add to that that there have been 18 countries that allow transgender personnel to serve, including Australia, Canada, Israel, and the UK, so countries that have high op tempos and a lot of operational requirements like the US. And those countries, when they allowed open transgender service, did not see big changes in either unit cohesion or overall readiness. So we don't really have any evidence that's consistent with this claim of high costs from allowing open service.
So based on the research that you did do, were there any actual legitimate concerns from whatever standpoint, practical or otherwise, or again, was that something that simply in the evidence you saw didn't exist?
I think the big thing is to try to actually figure out how to make these policies a reality. And I think a lot lessons to be learned from other countries include how to identify allowing service members to serve in their target genders in terms of housing, uniform, identification cards, and so forth. We have obviously changed a lot of the physical fitness standards to be uniform in the services to allow integration of gender into combat, but there are still questions of sort of what's on your ID card, what types of uniforms or services you might lead. And to that end, we have a number of recommendations on how to have effective policies on this, including explicit policies, but also education and training, anti-harassment work, that sort of thing, that can really help smooth the transition.
And is that the kind of training that would need to come from the top down? I don't know that we can expect any particular class of person in the military to be more enlightened than another.
That's right. I think the importance is really to have leadership emphasize both the values of an inclusive and diverse workplace and to emphasize clear anti-harassment and bullying policies.
Radha Iyengar is a senior economist at RAND. We've been talking about research on transgender members of the U.S. military that she took part in, and you're listening to the show.